SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports 0964, and at our website, stevebick.com, if you're listening that way. And literally, you know, right at the stroke of nine, you know how the computer, if you put stuff in the calendar, you know, and it pops up, you know, your father's birthday tomorrow. It's actually next month. You know, holidays, Easter, whatever. Literally, as the music came up, so did a little alarm clock logo. Preakness tomorrow. It should be Black Eyed Susan Day. And, of course, by Johnny's long-running weather analysis of Baltimore and its environs, either Friday or Saturday, it will rain. Doesn't matter. It might be Saturday for Preakness. It might be Friday for Black Eyed Susan. But one of the 2 days, I think last year ended that long-running streak, I think, right? We had two nice days. But for years, it was one or the other. You couldn't, not too often would you get either, you know, two beautiful days. And the last thing you wanted was two rainy days. I remember one Preakness when we were doing barbecue, when we were in the infield, and a storm rolled in after the day was over. I mean, the winds came up, the skies started to churn, and a storm descended on Pimlico that was just, I mean, it was frightening. It was pretty late, actually. It might have been like by 9 o'clock that night. We were packing up the truck, but oh my God, and you know, there's all kinds of crap in the infield and it's flying around. And, that's gotta be in the early aughts, 2004, 2005, that range. Got to be that long ago. Well, it's all right. We're going to find out tomorrow during the NBC coverage of Preakness Day, as established originally. There'll be a joint official designation for Preakness and when it's going to be run. Belinda Stronach and Governor Hogan. And I imagine, I haven't seen it in the press clippings, in the press release, but I imagine they have to touch on, I think they would touch on last week's institution into law of the redevelopment plan as well. So there's actually a lot of coverage to talk about for tomorrow, and that includes America's Day at the Races on Fox. And there is, I speculated yesterday, wasn't sure of the schedule yet. Andy is going to join us later in hour three. We'll get some opinions on particularly the Churchill action as the Downs gets rolling. Plenty of handicapping of the Downs card as the morning unfolds. Ed and James, meaning DeRosa and Scully. Nick Tamaro to start hour two. Marty McGee later this hour as well. So lots of Churchill conversation. Santa Anita as well. They, you know, the card they drew, if you haven't dug in, the card they drew for Sunday in a lot of ways is the highlight of the weekend. You got the Grade 3 Desert Stormer with Bella Fina back home, and I'm sure quite happy to be home. There's also some potential emergent star power in that race. First stars, specifically, literally, star power. First star for Ron Ellis Roatan returns on Sunday. There's a allowance race that goes as the nightcap on Sunday. Steve Anderson is going to join us. That allowance on Sunday on the main track, going two turns. Tiz a Magician wanted to get in that race and ended up on the AE list. But Cruel Jack has the return of Kiss Today Goodbye. Impressive last out. Maiden winner. This clearly, you know, it's for three and up. So, you know, there's older horses involved as well. But I'm sure that Mandela was hoping to get Tiz a Magician in there with eyes on the Santa Anita Derby in, what, 3 weeks? Yeah, in 3 weeks. So Steve Anderson's going to join us, and he'll tell you all about the mechanics that are involved later today for the return of racing at Santa Anita. Got the two Calbred Stakes as well tomorrow, the Evening Jewel and the Echo Eddie, and more. Maidens, two-year-olds get underway. There's a two-year-old race on Sunday. Going four and a half, goes as the second early on the card, and more. So looking forward to talking to Steve, who's been covering, he's been covering everything. Australia, quarter horses, you name it. Steve Anderson's on top of it. So we'll talk to Steve at about 11:20 Eastern time, 8:20 Pacific. End of the show, Mike Welch, and some happenings actually to discuss at Gulfstream, because the Saturday card with the nice sequence of stake races we touched on a little bit yesterday, that end of show visit, if you're listening to, you know, from the replay into live now this morning, you heard Dean and Patty Reeves, and well, you heard Dean. Patty was in the car. I don't know if Patty was driving at that point, but on their way to Ocala, and they're heavily invested in that Roar that starts the stake sequence as well as the Rainbow Six sequence. Second level allowance follows that. First level allowance going a mile on the main, the one turn. That's a nice group too, actually. And then the two other stakes, the Powder Break and the Musical Romance. And it's a good sequence. Mike Welch will join us. We'll get some thoughts from Mike. Today there's a stake at Gulfstream. The Hollywood Wildcat goes as the 10th, 5:49 Eastern. Tonal is Shape, the short favorite in there at 8-5. And does she have to win? No. I don't think she has to win. There's... You know, four or five horses that, you know, have got races if they're progressive. Kerry Pompey, actually, and my Purple Haze, Money Never Sleeps, who's moving seemingly forward quickly. And, in fact, mentioning Terry Pompey at Purple Haze, they won the feature yesterday at Gulfstream, if you were watching. Aerosol. The Wildcat Air Mare won well, actually. And so a lot going on. And today there's also, there was something else I noticed, I thought, at was that at Gulfstream? What did we say earlier in the week? We've gotten so used to just having, you know, focused opportunities that now with, you know, with multiple tracks gearing up, you got to get back to having the head on a swivel. And getting, digging deep into everything that's, you know, that now is re-emerging. And, of course, part of that included yesterday's kickstart at Golden Gate. That was quite well received, as you expected. And I think when Nick, I mean, I'll give you a quick overview, but probably touch on, you know, the ticket construction aspect a little bit with Nick Tamaro, because Nick, you know, had joined us on Wednesday to go through the sequence. And as we've been talking about these force outs, you know, there's been a been a steady parade of them between, you know, Gulfstream and now this one at Golden Gate, and then the four Souths at Foner. And there's really been, a consistent message, or at least a consistent format. And as we talked, like I talked with Andy and earlier in the week with Johnny, there haven't been winners that were impossible, that under no circumstance, you know, that you had to hit the all button. There really hasn't been that. I mean, there's been some tricky horses to find, but it's been ticket construction to me and how much you can invest that's been the key story. And that was the same yesterday. I mean, the couple of horses in here at short prices that were winners and fairly easy winners, including that Constitution Affair at even money in the second leg, and had been the third choice on the morning line. And the Simon Callahan shipper, you know, comes in and under Hernandez, you know, was in control early and really all the way around at even money. And that was the shortest price. Real Keeper, I think the one thing about Real Keeper, who, you know, I think was the second choice coming in the opener, and that was not necessarily a horse that, you know, we talked about Lydia O'Lydia. We talked about, I know Nick talked about Waverly Way, and maybe a little, you know, being aware of Thule Tunes at a price. But Real Keeper took plenty of money, vied for favoritism, and then, you know, was a winner. And from there, that Miss Lucky Lager in the third leg, that was a horse just at 6-1. As the third choice at 6-1, because Diamonds and Champagne was 6-5. Jen Pyre Strikes Back, cute name, 7-2, and then 6-1 on Miss Lucky Lager. And, you know, Nick got to her. I mean, she was 7-2 morning line, and she floated up. Loretta was a funny horse, and I know some people, you know, were grousing about getting knocked out, and when she beat Even Money Odessa by Thoroughgraph, anybody that was using Thoroughgraph had keyed in on Loretta, and knew that Loretta, you know, was a dangerous prospect in here, and sure enough. You know, in fact, on Thoroughgraph, Loretta was better, was a better play coming in than the favorite. And you got 10-1. And then there was Why the Long Face. For some reason, people gravitated in that maiden claimer. People gravitated to the horses that had run. And I don't know, at 12-5. You know, you're looking at a bunch of horses that have been running 40, you know, mid 40 buyers. Isn't it likely that there's one of the firsters that's better than the and Why the Long Face at over 5-1? You know, paid 1260. And I know Nick was, I think, thrilled with that. And then King Eddie in the nightcap, who paid 960. So the net result, they bet 2.1 million into the pot. So, you know, just about exactly five times the carryover. And it ended up paying 61.88, which was about 2.5 times the parlay. So these, you know, they, for the most part, these have all been paying, you know, well above parlay repeatedly, just because there's so, you know, there's the excess money in the pool. There's the extraneous combinations that get covered. So, they remain a great opportunity. But I'm going to come back to what I said earlier in the week, which is that I just don't think I ended up, I know Gus took a swing. I ended up not, you know, putting a play up, and I just did not have any confidence that for, you know, the typical $72 ticket, give or take, was going to get it done. But congratulations to those that popped, and that was a nice enough return, almost 6,200. The pick four paid 2,000. So, as always, a good exercise to go through, and I'll get some extra thoughts from Nick when he joins us. And last night at Charlestown, I know a lot of people were tied on. Charlestown, I think $4.3 million for their return to action. And that was a big card, pretty chalky sequences, and I actually ended up falling asleep about halfway through. Went upstairs and was watching a couple, and Tina followed later. And next thing I knew, it was like 12:45. I woke up, and so I checked this morning. But they did a lot of business. And it's going to remain to be seen how much get the sense. I saw some conversation. Craig Malkowski and Chris Rossi. Chris has got a very strong handle, and he was floating the opinion that the numbers have been very consistent during this 2 months, and that. While there may be some new interest and some people that have waded in, I know that his opinion seemed to be that, the money will spread out. It feels like big, like a big bump or big numbers, but that money will gravitate and spread, like frosting on a cake a little bit. When you've got a cupcake and there's that mound of frosting as opposed to a sheet cake where it's been spread out. So we'll see. Certainly a lot of chatter from people who are, started to play a little bit and are interested taken an interest, let's say, in what the game has to offer. We're going to head to the break and give you a lineup for those that I didn't mention. We think, you can never guarantee a Michael Dickinson visit. But last week, I had reached out to Michael. you'll remember we talked about the passing of Jack Preston, and Preston Wood, and Michael trained for them. And so I kind of reached out here and there, and lo and behold, yesterday afternoon late, I heard from Michael a week later. He said, sorry, we all do this, right? All of a sudden, you're looking for something, and you see a text that you hadn't seen. So I think Michael Dickinson might make an appearance. And if not, James Scully. I was prepared, just in case. Otherwise, if Michael turns up, we'll have Ed and James together in hour two. Marty McGee in this hour. Nick, atop of hour two. We'll check in with Hammer out west, where I'm sure he's talked to any number of horsemen and connections that are so relieved and so excited about getting back to racing. Ed and James. Andy? We'll do the little TV preview. Steve Anderson and Mike Welch. There you go. So that's the lineup. Other than that, keep waiting and watching for the various entities and jurisdictions. There's good news continues to be good news in some quarters, not so good in others. And as a juxtaposition, there's Woodbine and the progress toward their starting of the season in Toronto. And then there's Altoona, Iowa, where there is no prospect right now. And not good from what we're seeing. So table that a little bit till next week. But the murmuring regarding Prairie Meadows, I suppose it bodes well. If Prairie Meadows is not going to open, it bodes well for you know, the rest of the region for Canterbury and Indiana, Ohio moving toward, and the harness, you know, the one entity that has been completely shut out and dark has been the standard breds, but they're, you know, creeping back into the picture themselves. So we'll keep up on that, and looking to hear also specifics about Laurel and how quickly they're able to reboot as well. So we'll get started. You'll hear the next voice you hear beside mine will be potentially Michael Dickinson, otherwise James Scully, and much, much more. Weekend preview at the races. Lots to do. Stay with us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Talking to the biggest names in the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I remember the night the kid cut on his right arm. In a bit to save a bit of power. He got 50,000 watts. In a big acoustic tower. Security's so tight tonight. Whoa, they're ready for a tussle.
We're back at the races, and boy, you want to talk about good timing and things hitting on the screws. I literally was out of ink. I toner. And I was expecting yesterday. They said from Staples, they were. I'll give Staples a push. Overnight or next day delivery. And then you get the dreaded, we're experiencing delays. So I was pretty much out of the ability to print. And I just heard a little something, and sure enough, there it is. There's the pack on the delivery, and it was on the back, on the side porch. So listen here, the sound many of you are familiar with. That is the printer back in business. I love it. I also just heard from Sal Sinatra, and I appreciate the update. The situation for Laurel, they have a meeting late this afternoon, and meeting with Anne Arundel County health officials, and probably going over plans, and they'll know more about their ability to get going at Laurel after that. So there's the update. We also, as I feared, you got to be prepared. As I feared, Michael Dickinson is he's the wildest of wild cards, and so maybe we'll get to Michael at some point later in the show, and if not, next week. James Scully, though, standing by. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Excited for to return to Churchill this weekend, and Santa Anita today. So, it's great. Great time for the sport to be getting back at it.
You got to be excited. I knew that you and Ed would be, and everybody. Talked to some other people. We talked to Darren midweek, but you could just tell the relief at this. Charlestown, Eric Zimney, and everybody out west. I mean, it's just and it's more than just giving people a distraction. It's everybody's livelihood. I do want to bring up one topic that I think we've talked about over the years once before, but I did notice online, and Tina actually mentioned it, and then I told her that it was the anniversary. What you did for your uncle, giving a kidney, is about as generous and as selfless an act as anybody can perform. And it was the anniversary of the donation, a significant anniversary. And I just marvel at that, James.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. And yes, my Uncle Ron, he's doing really well still. So, yeah, I mean, I did it for him, and I was extremely relieved after the surgery that it turned out okay, and he didn't reject it. And very appreciative of your kind words, and got a lot of positive responses. My wife posted a post on Facebook, and a lot of people weighed in. So thank you again.
Yeah, it's amazing, and you got to be a tissue type match, and all of that, and I'm sure
right.
Other members of the family, right? You were all getting tissue typed, and to see if there were matches, and then comes the pretty harrowing call when they call and say you're a match, and the decision is in your lap. I mean, I gave blood and white blood cells for rhesus donation, and that's the same kind of thing. And I mean, it's not like having a kidney taken out, but it's a whole process. And I know what's involved here. I've been on the bone marrow transplant donation list, and they've never had a call to make a decision. But it's anytime you have a major surgery and you're doing it voluntarily, in that case, it's a courageous, generous act.
Yeah, and it was, basically I started in August is when I started the testing to make sure I was a match. And you're right, it's pretty, it's a bunch of visits, giving a lot of vials of blood. And then they're basically doing a complete physical mock-up, make sure you're healthy as well. And it's the gift of life. It really meant a lot to my family. It meant a lot to me.
Mm. Amazing. Well, there's a lot of courageous people that have been taking care of horses and sheltering in place with them on shed rows really around the country. A steady influx of horse flesh into the backstretch at the Downs and also over at Spectrum, over at the training center, and, you know, training centers throughout Kentucky. And then, of course, Keeneland. So there are horses coming from everywhere, James. We talked a little bit with John Nichols at the beginning of the week in advance of training restarting on Wednesday. What is your suggestion for a general approach to weighing the horses that have recency versus the ones that have been kind of on the shelf for anywhere from 40 to 75 days?
Well, I definitely think it's a little bit of a different dynamic between dirt and turf, where you're going to have more horses on dirt that have raced recently at Oaklawn or Gulfstream. But, I'm going to be looking to see how horses have performed off of freshening previously, how the barns do. It's such a deep, like you mentioned, with all the horses on the grounds and close by, so many stakes horses that are, you know, ready to run, that with only 16 stakes being offered, we see it on tomorrow's opening day card and even on Sunday, where these allowance races are going to be littered with stakes horses. And, you know, for the most part, they're going to be competitive betting events. Monomoy Girls' race is the exception, because there's going to be a lot of depth to them. You're going to have a lot of stakes horses using these allowance races at Churchill and then moving back to stakes company this summer.
Yeah.
I'll mention one other thing too, Steve. I mean, one of my general approaches is trying to be vulnerable favorites. I look at a card like tomorrow, and one of the angles that I'll be attacking is trying to find some horses that I don't like and, you know, perhaps take a strong stance if I have a opinion there. I always like to be able to spread in other spots and, you know, back up my opinions.
Well, let's dive in, and I guess we could, if there's anything from today, you mentioned with Santa Anita starting, but any other interest on a Friday before we look at tomorrow?
Yeah, today is Santa Anita, race number 5. Number 1, Heather's Gray, last fall returned from a similar freshening, won by open length to Santa Anita. She's a filly that, to me, has really started to come to hand for Sean McCarthy over the winter. 2 starts back, she led the field in the mile and a half of Aster in this stretch. The distance was a little bit too long. Last time she got caught wide chasing a hot pace. I think she's going to be set up for her best today. I think she's going to be inside speed. She's a 1 mile Santa Anita turf specialist, and I think being drawn on the inside with Aaron Grider, she's got filly that I'll definitely use, and she's 8-1 on the morning line.
Nice. All right. Let's press into Saturday and get going on Churchill. Start wherever you want.
All right. Well, I'll start with Monomoy Girls race. I do like Monomoy Girl. I mean, I won't be better, obviously, to win at odds on. If, she's going to be more of like a single and multi-race plays. But if I was to play the race straight, I'd be looking to play exactly. And one of the reasons why I like her, Steve, is because I think her main rivals in this race, especially Tot Boob to me and Lady Kate, just haven't run their best races at Churchill Downs. And I think that this is a race where those fillies are going to be out there, potentially up close. It could set up for a filly like Miss Bigley, especially if there's any moisture at all in the track, who's entering this race in good form to come running late for a share, or even Asmussen's other filly, number 5, Estelio Feminino. She's a one-turn closer who I think will, could really get the right setup to come running late. So that's pretty much my opinion on Monomoy Girl. I hope she runs well. It looks like she's really been training forwardly at Keeneland in preparation.
Yeah, I kind of hinted at that too. I felt the same way, that there were enough interesting options. If you're going to get her, it's on the comeback. I mean, you got a few horses actually that are within, you know, within the area code of her. So I think it's interesting. I think she'll win, but I don't blame anybody for taking a swing. And of course, the race is, you know, the race is on the early part of the card, part of the first pick five and pick four. So, it's up to you. And then there's a middle pick four that starts with race five. So, go on with it.
All right. Well, I'm going to jump to the first race in the late pick five, race number seven. That race, obviously, I think Say Moi, the horse to beat in there, she's going to be bet down from 5-2 after running into Center Isle, who looks like a filly with so much promise for Chad Brown. But, you know, she's not a front runner. I don't see a lot of pace in this race. And I am intrigued by number 12, Stonewood, because Carlo Vacareza from like the last 100 starts has won like six times first time out. The second time out, he's 14% from his last 69 second time starters with a positive ROI. He uses a race to get ready. I thought that was a perfect setup on February 16th at Gulfstream Park. It looks like they obviously were looking to run her in her second start at Keeneland with the delay in the race being the meet being canceled. They wound up angling instead to a maiden special way to Churchill Downs. And this 12 Stonewood has a chance to get clear and lead wire to wire, upset a favorite, I thought, in race seven.
Yeah, you know, you got just enough, you know, first-time starters and second-time starters in here that, you know, shake things up a little bit. Now, this is an interesting... It's an interesting group, actually, and there may be some real upside coming right out yet. You know, that's,
and I think a lot of people will be paying attention. I mean, Mott has, I think, five horses in tomorrow. The first of those horses is Say Moi. Obviously, he's coming in a little bit of a cold streak. He's eligible to turn things around at Churchill Downs, but it'll be interesting to see how his horses run, because Say Moi is going to be a short price. He's going to be one of the shortest price favorites on the card after Monomoy Girl, and he has a couple other horses that are going to be bet down as well. Looking at race number eight, Steve, that race is. I thought there was. I thought the outside horse, the number 12, Clear for Action, had some speed. But I think she's very eligible to be sitting second to number 3, Mind the Gap. And, you know, you look at trainers like coming off like a 3-plus-month layoff, people immediately think about like guys that are in the top 10 in earnings, like in the country, Asmussen, Baffert, other big stables. But for lower-profile trainers, Arnaud Delacour is like one of the best in the country. He is 28% win off of a long layoff. And what I like about Mind the Gap was he added blinkers to this gelding two starts back at Delaware, and I thought it made a difference that day. Came back last time against Winners, you know, chased a hot pace there, and, you know, pretty even, you know, weakened in the stretch to fourth. But I think tomorrow he can dictate terms from post number 3 with Manny Franco, and a 12-1 on the morning line. To me, he's the kind of horse that I like for at least multi-race wagers, because he's got a chance to steal this at a decent price.
Nice.
Race number 9 is one of my best bets on the card. Number 2, Adahar, is trained by Tom Amos. Amos is 39% second off the claim. I think he wins at approximately that win percentage like the first 2 weeks of the spring meet every year at Churchill Downs. He knows how to get these horses ready. And obviously claimed this horse from a convincing maiden win two starts back. Brought him back against 80 claimers. I think that was a race where he was more than willing to take a quick profit if he lost him, but he was using it strictly as a prep for this race. I think he'll get this four-year-old, this gelding will continue to build upon that effort. Well drawn in post 2, and I really like his chances tomorrow. And one of my other opinions in race 9, Steve, surrounds number 12, Admire, who is a slight 5-1 morning line favorite. I do think he'll take action with Santana picking up the mount. But he really has run poorly in both one-turn starts. I look at his form. He hasn't run that fast. And his one decent race where he ran second, that was a 5-horse field where he was really a non-threatening effort, and I thought it was a little bit of a false performance. So I think if I look at a horse like him, and I'm wondering if he's going to be 10 or more lengths off the pace in the early stages, because he's a little bit of a plotter who performs better at two turns.
Okay.
And then in race number 10, this is a pretty nice allowance race.
A very good group.
I'm willing to take a stand against the probable favorite in here, and that's number 2, Portrait. And granted, her running fourth in the Silver Bullet Day and running second last time, ahead second at Fairgrounds, those were solid efforts. But you can just look at this filly. She's been bet off the board in 4 of her 5 starts. She's lost 3 of those races. Her lone win came at Ellis Park, where she was really able to dictate terms when she got to the midway point of the far turn. And I just wasn't a big fan of her effort in the Pocahontas last fall over the track. I think she's vulnerable in this spot at a short price. I like number 8, Ford Races. I mean, she could easily be the second choice, I think, in the wagering. But that's a filly that I don't mind a horse getting a race against winners. I still like her to debut a lot, and I thought she really ran into a nice filly as well. That winner last time, that Empire Maker for Phil Shug McGahee, is 2 for 2. So I look for 4 Graces to improve upon that, run a big race in race 10.
Yeah, and you mentioned that race that she came out of at Gulfstream. That's a race worth tracking too, especially if 4 Graces comes back and runs well here.
Yeah, for sure. And then in the last race, I'm very hopeful that the races stay on the turf. They don't get much rain. I think they'll definitely run it with some rain because it's opening day. But I see a lot of speed in this field. And number 4, Carrick, could actually, to me, really be a big part of that as well, because I didn't think she broke that well in her last 2 starts last fall in New York. But in that Cincinnati Trophy, she broke sharply from the gate, showed high speed. She's one of several in here who could be out there winging it, and I really like Fly So Pretty. She's a filly I'm going to look to single, because I think her last race at Aqueduct last November, the way that race set up, could be a carbon copy of what happens tomorrow, where she's in full flight on the far turn and runs them down to win for Mark Cassie. I thought she basically... That one race at Kentucky Downs, I can excuse that effort, and I see her as a filly with a bunch of upside, and Joel Rosario, stays on honor, and, he could have a good day tomorrow.
Well, that was part of a storyline, too, going into the draw, or coming out of the draw the other day. And in fact, I went down that list. Obviously, we don't know how long the New York jocks are going to be hanging around. I mean, as soon as things get going at Belmont, they'll be back. Although they may come back and forth and cherry pick, given some of the client base and some of the associations and the extension, of the Florida action, James, Talamo and company in from Oaklawn, but Franco, Johnny V, the Ortizes, Javier Castellano, they're all on hand. I mean, that jock room is
Manny,
crazy.
Manny Franco's there. Yeah, I mean, it's yep. Yeah, and plus, I mean, you're right. I mean, Joe Talamo, he would be in California potentially. You've got you're going to have guys like Mike Smith is going to be in riding, and other jockeys from California as well. There's it's an extremely deep group to start the meet. It's the kind of thing where even with all the horses on the grounds, last fall was a good example. Asmussen won almost 20 races. Brad Cox won 15 races. They're not going to be able to have that level of success just because it's such a competitive, deep playing field this year.
Well, it's a great way to start, and Sunday's more of a meat and potatoes kind of a card, but they'll be rolling out, and we'll start to look forward to some big Saturdays, and particularly we got the Matt Wynn that now, as Darren announced, the 50 points, going to go over some of that stuff with Marty McGee next. James, good luck today, tomorrow, Sunday, and we're starting to get the action, more options on the betting menu, and I think we're headed in the right direction. That's been the message all week.
Yeah, and it looks like by this point next week, all these derby preps, all these meets, hopefully will be scheduled like you've been talking about. And, thanks for having me on, Steve. Best of luck to you this weekend.
James Scully, everybody, and the return of action at Churchill. In fact, you know what, Case? Why don't we stay and reach for Marty McGee right now and save ourselves 3-4 minutes, and we'll roll right in. And on the topic, because, you know, Marty spent so much time in Baltimore, and normally on this day, Marty would be sitting right with me, and he'd be... You know, he'd be sitting in the office, and you know, we'd be talking, and I always would start out, you know, the visits with Marty and let him riff on his time in Baltimore, which he really, you know, not that he isn't thrilled to be, you know, working out of you know, his hometown and all that, but he loved it in Baltimore. Today is the anniversary, considering that it's the first opportunity, really, of having, you know, the third Saturday in May. So in terms of modern Preakness history, this is the first Saturday where, you know, you got a bulk of Preakness anniversaries, including the 10-year anniversary on the nose of looking at Lucky, Martin Garcia, and Baffert, and, of course, Pegram, Whiteman, and Pegram, Whiteman, and I'm forgetting the third. And Smarty Jones won on May 15th, Charismatic on the 15th, Prairie Bayou, Aloma's Ruler. How about that? And Butch Lenzini and Cowboy Jack Canale and Cannonero, Tom Rolfe, as we brought up yesterday, which kicked off a rollicking conversation of history with Haskin, Citation in 48, one of our Caros, how many, Caro won seven, something like that. And also the anniversary of War Admirals, Preakness win. Marty McGee, Marty wasn't there for War Admiral, although Jay Privman might suggest that he was. Marty, good morning.
How you doing?
We're good. We're good. And you know, I was riffing, you know, until you came on.
You know, who was there was George Moore, M-O-H-R, who during my tenure there in Maryland would hold forth in the Pimlico press box talking about all his exploits as a young man. And he was around for quite a bit. I think he lived into his 90s, maybe even to 100. But George Moore was a trainer who was there for the War Admiral Seabiscuit match race back in 37 or 38. Yeah.
But, very I'm sure, cool.
Yeah, I'm sure he was there for the May 15th Preakness win by War Admiral, too.
Well, and I'm trying to think from the West Coast, the late Noble Trewitt, I believe. If Jay Hovde's listening, he'll confirm it. I think Noble Trewitt was on hand as well. And... There were a few that for a number of years, especially when Seabiscuit came out, when the book and then the movie, you know, was being celebrated, quite a few people around the industry, and somebody else, who else? It might have been the Trewitt was at Caliente for Farlap. That might be it. I might be conflating those two, but you know, that was great history. And you were the first to respond yesterday to those pictures of Joe Hirsch, that because Haskin really was sweet, remembering, as Jay does and so many of you guys do, appreciating Joe.
Yeah, one of your pictures was with Barney Nagler and Chick Lang. Chick Lang loved to do this. The first time I ever went down to his office, as I put on Twitter, he had this giant, and I mean big, probably 10 feet by 5 feet, photo replicated, plastered up on a ceiling of his office. And then he will say, you know, everybody looks up to Barney Nagler. He doesn't look up at the ceiling. He just looks at you for your reaction. And he points his finger up, and then you look up, and he, you know, he deadpans. He had that kind of sense of humor. So I think Barney Nagler, he was about 5'2", fabulous rider. He was such a great supplement or sidekick or to Joe Hirsch. You know, Joe wrote the straight kind of racing stuff, and you never knew what Barney was going to write about. Sometimes he wrote about racing, but often not. He would write about boxing or the Yankees or whatever. But, you know, he was a throwback to the old, I guess, Joe Palmer type of sports writer, Red Smith and all that. It was just great prose that he used to post in DRF. So, yeah, it's great going back there and just think about all the guys who have been part of the DRF history.
Well, and you know that press box, and I've got all those wonderful black and whites that I take pictures of the pictures, and it's always literally a celebration every Preakness week of the game and the game's history. And there were so many characters, and that region has just been incredibly productive. And you know, even though there's no Preakness tomorrow, there's going to be one. And then starting in about, no, we're guessing 2025, there's going to be, you know, a new shining monument on the hill, a new Pimlico and a new Laurel. And the future of Maryland racing looks really bright. Meanwhile, Marty, here we are, and Churchill ready to get going, and all week long as the horses returned like swallows to Capistrano, it's really been a festive scene coming out of the backstretch.
Well, it has been. I haven't been over there. They only let my brother in there, not me. He's the only McGee left there because he has a trainer's license and I don't. And but from all, you know, I've been on the phone with, you know, a dozen guys or so, just seeing how it's going. Guys like Al Stahl telling me entries are nuts. You know, he's entered four horses. Two were number 16 on AE list, and the other two were excluded. So that's, I think we tallied them up. Counting AEs and exclusions, they had 209 entries on the 11-race opener tomorrow. They had 221 entries, including AEs and exclusions, on the 11-race Sunday card. So clearly there's pent-up demand, not only here from the Kentucky guys, but all the people coming in from elsewhere. I've seen guys like Rudy Rodriguez has a couple entered. You know, people are just desperate to run right now, Steve. So they've got kind of a funky entry system whereby it's a free-for-all. There's no stars or anything because they don't want to handle the full papers because of this COVID thing. And so I'm not real clear on the protocols, how it's all going to go claiming wise, etc. But the bottom line is, for the entries, it's just by lot, I think, whoever makes these maiden specials and allowances, they get in, and to the exclusion of horses who otherwise would merit being in the race. But that's the only minor complaint I think that we've got going. Otherwise, everybody likes to see these big fields we're going to have here on the first 2 days.
Well, and we talked on Wednesday to Darren and got a number of tidbits. In fact, the raising of the point value to the Matt Wynn upcoming, making it a very attractive proposition, I'm sure, for a lot of a lot of Derby hopefuls. Then came the portion about Preakness or Belmont, if they were to run, there would be bonus points involved there, starting at 150. The stakes calendar, give everybody a feel, Marty, for what we're looking forward to here over the next couple of weeks.
Well, the one thing you mentioned about the Preakness and Belmont being 150 to the winner if they are run before the Derby, I wonder, do you have any scoop as to what the announcement is going to be tomorrow from Pimlico as for the Preakness date?
I don't. I heard from Sal Sinatra that right now, his priority obviously is to get Laurel open, and they're meeting with the Anne Arundel health officials later this afternoon, early evening, and they'll have a plan for getting started there. I gotta believe. WBAL is suggesting and coming out with that report about the time being blocked by the network. It just seems too likely that, that the October 4th date, it just feels like that's probably a fait accompli.
Well, if it's October 3rd, which I believe is the Saturday, that really that throws a wrench into the Triple Crown. With the Derby being on September 5th, if you had the Preakness on September 19th, then you can go October 8th or 10th or whatever it is for the Belmont, and that would lead nicely into the November 6th, 7th Breeders' Cup at Keeneland here in Kentucky. But I guess there are other considerations. If they're going to do it October 3rd, who knows when they would run the Belmont? I guess they're going to run the Belmont. But anyway, getting back to you're talking about this Matt Wynn being the first points race on the road to the September 5 Derby, and Churchill put out a list of probables for the Matt Wynn, which had gone from a 10 to the winner to 50 points to the winner on their revised schedule. And the names that we expected to see were Maxfield and Major Fed. I think the other horse of note who they've added to that list is Max Player for Linda Rice, who I think hasn't even run since, what, the Gotham or one of those races in New York?
No, earlier, even earlier, yeah. The Withers or the Jerome.
Yeah, and he had been pointed to the Wood. Of course, that was canceled. And so he's in there. Also, I had contacted Brett Calhoun about the Oaklawn Stakes winner, the horse that was 46-1, Mr. Big News. And that was when the Churchill had first come out with it being 10 points to the winner for the Matt Wynn. He says, I'd really like to have some more points. They haven't included Mr. Big News on this list of prospects for the Matt Wynn, but I would imagine with the 50 to the winner now, Brett Calhoun might be more enticed to run on that. And there might be some strangers to filter in after further consideration. I think they enter for this race next Wednesday.
Well, and expand a little bit on a few of those points. And since you did bring up the magic horse and the magic individual with Maxfield, happy birthday, Brendan Walsh, everybody. I just put up a picture of you and Brendan from Santa Anita, Marty, and through the magic of social media, we know that it's Brendan's birthday.
Well, you know what?
Happy.
I saw him. Where did I see him? Oh, it was right after, after we got back here to Churchill last fall, because you took that picture. It was like the Monday of Breeders' Cup week. And his first horse scratched, it was Maxfield. And then a few days later, he had to take Vitology, or, you know, the best made scratch Vitology. I said, man, you should never be on with me on BIC at the same time anymore. It was a hell of a change there. So down at Gulfstream this winter, it had to be Sunday the 9th or Sunday the 16th, Sunday the 8th or Sunday the 15th. Anyway, that was right when all the COVID stuff was breaking real hard, and it became quite apparent that it looked like Churchill was going to have to reschedule the Derby. And I asked Brennan to the effect, does that hurt your feelings? And he gave me the biggest blank eating grin you've ever seen, like, no, that's kind of good for me, you know. So of all the horses on these everybody's Derby list, clearly Maxfield is the one who's benefited most from the extra 4 months. We're all looking forward to see how he does in his return a week from tomorrow in the Matt Wynn at Churchill.
Well, looking forward to getting going, and some other things that we can touch on. I just talked to Scully, and I've remarked all week, Marty, based on the first weekend here, the New York Jocks presence, as well as Tyler Gaffalione's presence tomorrow. And of course, all the guys came over from Oaklawn. I guess they'll stay as long as they can. And when New York gets started, they'll gravitate out.
Yeah, you would think. I don't know about Jose Ortiz. I think Jimmy Riccio said that he's going to stay for the meet. But otherwise, you would have to think that Rosario and Johnny V and Javier would all go back to New York. Have you heard a date on them? What's the smart money on them starting back?
Well, there were a couple, you know, it's funny, I haven't mentioned it yet this morning. There were a couple of things over the last couple of days that feel like positive indices. The opening of the main track, which, you know, essentially spreads horses out, and you know, the fact that it's going to require, you know, more attendance, you know, at various points, you know, for horses to make their way to the main, that seemed like a good sign. And you know, then there was the startup the last day or two with testing, blood testing, and they want to get everybody signed off, you know, in terms of antibodies and so forth. They're, you know, they had yesterday, they were sending out messages all day to horsemen to, you know, have your staff, you know, come and get tested. So it feels like those are, you know, some of the requirements, you know, based on the way the rest of the state is being opened up. Yesterday, another two regions inched very close. Central New York, you know, where I went to school and, you know, very familiar, you know, with the Syracuse, Utica, you know, Binghamton, through that, you know, that triangle. And the North Country is going to get the approval next up toward the St. Lawrence. And virtually, you know, every district in New York other than the city proper is literally one step or so away from this 7-point opening, reopening plan that Albany has laid out. And Long Island is very close. So I think we're inching forward very steadily. And I know they're hoping for the 29th. 2 weeks from today, and knock on wood, and you know, from our mouth to God's ears, as we say.
Yeah, that would be good. That, you know, so like we were talking about the jockeys, they, those guys I mentioned, they'd probably go back. But the Oaklawn guys and the Lanneries and Leperous who have dominated action here over the last decade or so, they're here. Florent Giroux and Joe Talamo and Martin Garcia and Santana It's the jockey room will not lack for talent or depth, that's for sure. And then you've got Chad Brown here with his first non-Keeneland, non-Breeders' Cup, non-Derby string at Churchill. He's got 24 settling in here with Whit Beckman, his longtime assistant, who graduated from San X High, by the way. And so he's here. He's going to be here with 24. The best horse he's got is Dunbar Road. She runs in the new Shawnee a week from tomorrow. But that's I asked Whit for some big namers, and that was all he gave me. So I guess Chad will be looking to break some maidens and go through some allowance conditions with most of the others. Todd Pletcher's supposed to have 15. Baffert is not sending a string like he often does with Jimmy Barnes, but he's going to send in the occasional stray, it looks like, in the care of D. Wayne Lucas. Otherwise, you got the Asmussens and the Makers and Dale and everybody else here, Brad Cox, and, you know, like Al Saul said, I'm just trying to get a horse, you know, in the starting gate. So it's quite the jam up at the entry box.
Well, next Saturday, we'll talk about the stake sequence when we're together on Friday for weekend preview, the War Chant, the Shawnee, the Blame, the Grade 3 Matt Win, and the Teppin, and watch the news feed from Darren Rogers and from KK, Kevin Kirstein, and from DRF McGee as well. Marty, any opinions to offer? Who do you like? Pick a couple of spots.
Well, I think Joe Talamo is going to win the first race of the meet. He needs the money. He's buying a house here in Louisville. And he's got a horse named Baudette Blizzard for Dallas, favorably drawn in the open air outside 12 hole in the opener, the meet opener for West Point et al. And so I'm going to use that horse to try and get alive. You know, it is a pick, I guess it starts with a pick four or pick five. Your fourth race tomorrow, of course, is a Monomoy five. Girl. So, I mean, she's going to be 2-5 or so. You know, 18-month-plus layoff, but I don't know, there's a couple of good horses in there, Talk Glove to Me and Lady Kate. So I haven't quite decided what to do there. I picked, Hermes picked Monomoy Girl. I don't know how I'm actually going to bet it, though. But, you know, there's all kinds of great stuff. They got, I think, three of the last four races are allowances in the card tomorrow, and they're all full fields, and it's great stuff.
I saw where you made Irritator from Amos in the sixth, your best of the day.
Yeah, and that's a Talamo too, is it not? Let's see here. Irritator in the sixth. Am I on the right? Yeah. I mean, he's live on a few mounts. Jake Rome and Dale Sun has really done a bang-up job with Joe. As they, you know, he and Bayerano is supposed to be here. I neglected to mention him. He's back to his old stomping grounds. It was back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, when he was here dominating. It was all kind of the Pat Day. When Pat Day retired in 2005, the vacuum created has effectively been filled by Bayerano and then Le Perroux and then Lannery. That's kind of been the pecking order here.
Well, and I know that I had an exchange with Samantha Siegel yesterday because she's got horses running there and at Santa Anita. She's got five over the weekend, I think is the number at least. And what do you guys got? You got Hoffa on. Is that you? Is that?
Yeah, that's my brother. He's on the AE though. I think he's number 13. So. Yeah, he's in for his first tag. He could off the AE's end of the circle, like we like to say.
I love it. Marty, glad that everybody gets back to work in full tomorrow. And how? What kind of access? Do you have to cover it remotely, or what's the deal on that front?
Yeah, I wrote something about in the Saturday DRF. By the way, you can get DRF for $8 in the local area. I just got an email from our bosses in New York. $8 DRS in the local area here in Louisville. No access for me, but they tell me I'm first on the list when it eases up a little bit. My understanding is that they will have three of the talking heads. They will have two of them working on a day-to-day basis, Joe Christofek, Scott Shapiro, and Ed DeRosa. Two of those three will be there every day. I don't know about presence for among other media outlets. I think they're trying to do a little something, but it's going to be bare minimum. Just, you know, no horse owners, that says it all. If the owners don't get to go, you know, why should pretty much anybody else except those with the hands on the horses?
Well, and much like what we saw at Hong Kong, I just wonder, you know, what point there'll be some, you know, some licensee opportunity. You would hope, you know, that much like we saw there, you know, there was the shutout first, and then slowly, you know, their licensees started, and then licensees, you know, plus a, you know, plus three, something like that, and they kind of expanded.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
hopefully,
you would think it would ease up like that. You know, Steve, something we haven't really even talked about. The big question here about Churchill Downs right now: are fans going to get to come to the Derby? And
right.
You know, we're not going to know the answer to that. And what will it look like? Will it look like they're talking about these stadiums every third seat or every third box or whatever? You know, are we looking at a 40,000 attendance for the Kentucky Derby because of that? Are we looking at nothing or what? So, to me, that's the main thing that we all want to know. The other stuff we're talking about right now really kind of doesn't matter that much.
Well, the problem with the September concerns is, and even to an extent for us here, you know, the assumption is that in New York there won't be attendance to Saratoga, but it's hard to just speculate right now.
Right.
It's all idle. I mean, it's just such a strange scenario that you know, you really can't say anything definitive.
Right. You can't. You know, so talking about who gets to come to the races on these, you know, these May and June dates, it's in the big picture, it's kind of small potatoes. What's going to happen with the Derby? You know, it's really looming large on our horizon here.
Well, and before we go, Mart, since this came up, we really should ask too. It seems that Keeneland is serious about getting a handful of dates and running a couple of their features, including the bluegrass, in amongst the Ellis Park season. Basically, what's the status of that?
You know, I was just on with Tom Leach, and he's out of Lexington, and we were talking about that. And I have brought up to you before on this show, I don't know why they want to do it, you know, especially with the Breeders' Cup on their plate right ahead. And it, given how hot the weather is it, whenever they're talking about running July or August, but the date that Tom and I agreed on would be the weekend of Saturday, July 11, maybe that week, what would that be, the 8th through the 12th of July, because Churchill has ended. Saratoga hasn't yet started. You could get a lot of the jockeys and trainers who are still here and some guys work. And are you there?
Yeah.
And so to me, if they are trying for that, and again, I don't really know why they're trying it, but, you know, obviously Churchill listed the Bluegrass and the Ashland and the Beaumont as points races, I guess on the assumption that Keeneland will get those dates from Ellis Park here in Kentucky and run around that time. I guess that's what they're trying for.
Interesting. All right. Well, we got to track all this. Marty, I appreciate it, and good luck this weekend. We'll talk next Friday.
Thanks a lot.
Marty McGee, everybody. We'll stay here, and we'll go forward to catch up and enjoy a visit with Nick.